And people start coming, and it's like, oh, honey, wow, you really invited a lot of people, and God, they're all really amazing-looking men. I mean, these are like the most gorgeous men I've seen in a long time.
I grew up with a family with a lot of really good values, manners, and respect, but we also were Jehovah's Witnesses, which I'm sure I don't have to tell you what that is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
I'm Jessica Henkin. And this week on the podcast, I've got big news. Not me, but these two storytellers do. Two stories about the surprises involved in becoming the person you really are.
But before we get started, we want to thank Park School, where people become the people they really are.
For sure.
Independent co-ed school here in Baltimore, K through 12. So this first storyteller, Alexandra Deutsch, has told a couple stories at the Stoop. She works in museums. She actually is now the director of museum engagement at Winterthur Museum. Winterthur, also known as Winterthur. Don't write it with the H if you don't say it. That's what
Just
I'm saying.
Just to be clear, W-I-N-T-E-R-T-H-U-R. Winterthur.
Garden and Library.
Yes.
And she consults at the Maryland Historical Society, where she has worked for many, many years. So just to give you a sense of who she has told a previous story. She lives in a Victorian home here in Baltimore, and through a dinner party where she used a menu, made a 12-course menu that was of the day of the home's building, which was like 1890 mm-hmm. or something. And everybody dressed in period clothing and used her period china and silver. And then they saw the ghost, who was the woman of the house.
So she saw the ghost.
She saw the ghost, only her.
Yeah.
This story that she's sharing now is a little different. So take a listen.
It's 2003, and I live in Annapolis, and I really live in Annapolis. Like, I have a winter water view that we talk about, and I wear a Lily Pulitzer, and I have a little blonde daughter, and I have a blonde husband, and he's a sailor, and that's my life. So my Uber WASP, J. Crew, first husband, comes home and says, I want to be a Jew. Like, that's great. You know, my dad's Jewish. I always wanted to be Jewish. This is awesome. I am full on with this. I'm going to do everything for this conversion. Everything you want. I'm going to throw you a Hanukkah party. And I am going to make arugula, and my dad's going to make latkes, and we are going to do this thing. So in my house that had, like, all this nautical shit in it, I'm making arugula, and I'm calling my Aunt Mitzi, and I'm getting pot roast recipes, and we are going to have the Hanukkah party to end all Hanukkah parties. And I even buy cookie cutters that are dreidels, and I make blue and silver icing, because this is for my husband, and he's a Jew now. And so it's the party, and my dad's making the latkes, and I've got little bags with, you know, gelt in them. And people start coming, and it's like, oh, honey, wow, you really invited a lot of people, and God, they're all really amazing-looking men. I mean, these are like the most gorgeous men I've seen in a long time, and he has chaps on. Yeah, he's got, actually, the one with the chaps on, him. Where'd you meet him? So anyway, latkes and pot roast and dreidel. I made it out of clay, and I'm, you know, it's the whole thing. And it's, you know, it's 2003. It's Queer Eye for the Straight Guy in my house. And I think for just this moment, this is very interesting. This is a profound shift in my husband's friends group. But it's cool, and my mother's loving it. She is just, this is her dream come true. Gorgeous, gay men, dancing, singing, spinning dreidels. It's awesome. So, fast forward, it's Christmas, and the day after Christmas, we are going on this fabulous vacation to Charleston, and we've rented an 18th century house, and you know, it's all in keeping with this theme of, you know, blonde, perfect, preppy, sailing Annapolis life. And that next day, my then husband says, I've got something really big to tell you, and we're going to go to this gorgeous bar, and I'm going to tell you this big news. And I honestly thought we got into the yacht club. It has happened. It was not the yacht club. So it was his coming out. And I have to admit that on one level, I was prepared. On the other level, I was absolutely not prepared for this. But my point, I guess, of the whole story is I look back on all this and I reflect on the year ahead, which is 2016, which is a huge year for him and a huge year for me. He is getting married to his amazing partner, who we love so much in my family that now he's like one of the family. And it's also my 10th wedding anniversary with my second husband, and husband forever. And so I think it's a really amazing coming out story in the sense that something really incredible happened when he came out. And I don't wear a Lilly Pulitzer anymore. I don't live in Annapolis. And he's got a powerboat. but the best part is that we became the people that we really are. And so it was a coming out for both of us.
So if
you got to tell people about Annapolis, because she sort of talks about living in Annapolis and this and what wearing Lilly Pulitzer and having a sailboat and all that.
Yes.
So I mean, you come from the dark side of Annapolis.
I do. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Annapolis is the state capital of Maryland. It is also the sailing capital of the world.
Of the world?
Yes. That's what it considers itself. I don't know if that's true, but it's claim to fame. It boasts.
It's very preppy.
Oh, my God.
So preppy.
It's where the Naval Academy is.
Yeah.
It's where a lot of, Lilly Pulitzer and Izod and whatever the newest. I'm dating myself because that's what I was.
I think they still wear that stuff.
The trauma.
I think it's okay.
The trauma.
It's ongoing.
Years. It's where you could go and date rate comfortably with no consequence. It's a town for that.
If your collar was popped.
Only if you want to date rape with your popped collar. You go to Annapolis.
Okay. Now we will never be sponsored by anything in Annapolis. But what is so fascinating is they were picture perfect Annapolis people. And then it's just always the people who you think
I don't remember a lot of chaps being worn to parties in Annapolis.
No.
That was an indicator that things were about to.
That's right.
Maybe go off the rails.
That's right. So for those listening carefully, the chaps should have been the first sign that maybe this wasn't really going to go the way everybody thought. So, and if you want to hear more about Annapolis, you can always reach out to Jessica on Facebook or just listen to various podcasts throughout the year. She's
going to
end her Catholic school and all sorts of stuff. For now, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine, which is at baltimoremagazine.com, and you can find them on the newsstand. They've got all the up-to-date restaurants, events, all that good stuff, and you can check out their podcast, Baltimore Boomerang. I'm going to thank Golden West, which is a restaurant on the Avenue in Hamden that's got all sorts of cool breakfast stuff, vegan Texas stuff, Southwestern bar, really great long bar, late night window, just really, really cool Baltimore institution. We're so glad to have them as part of the podcast sponsors.
So our next storyteller, Jabari Lyles, is one of my favorite people. He's just got wonderful energy. He comes from outside of Annapolis, Glen Burnie. And he is got over 10 years of working in roles, which emphasizes, he says, his passion for community and social justice. So he's the LGBTQ affairs liaison for Baltimore City Office of the Mayor, which is a hard and awesome task. But for Jabari, it's totally within his wheelhouse. So take a listen to kind of how he got there.
The year is 1996, and I am 6 years old, and I'm in first grade, and I live with my mom and my dad in a little apartment in Glen Burnie with my little sister and my little brother, and I grew up with a family with a lot of really good values, manners, and respect, but we also were Jehovah's Witnesses, which I'm sure I don't have to tell you what that is if you're home on a weekend morning. enjoying breakfast and someone offers you a mini magazine. I don't know. So I always grew up with a lot of rules and boundaries, and I was always receiving messages about how I should navigate the world, particularly as a young black boy. How I should act, how I should talk, how I should walk, how I should move my hands, how I should move my hips, how my voice should sound. And I got these messages not only from my family, but from friends and from peers. I remember around this age, a kid pulled me aside on the playground and said, "Hey, are you gay?" And I did not really know what that word meant, but I knew to say no. So I already knew that whatever that was not something good to be, and the world might not be safe for you if you display clues that you might be different in any way. So anyway, it's 1996, and we lived in a small apartment on the ground floor where you could see right out of the balcony. And it was a tradition in my family to dance and sing and clean around the house. And this particular day, my grandmother was over, and the song Fantasy by Mariah Carey comes on. That, give me your love, give me your love, you know that song. I loved that song, and I remember there was a lyric that really stood out to me even at that age, which was, "I'm in heaven with my boyfriend, my laughing boyfriend." And at that age, I had no idea what a boyfriend was, but for some reason, I really connected to the emotion in that lyric, and I thought, what would it be like to be in heaven? No beginning, no end. And so that song comes on, and we turn it all the way up, and we start to dance. And, of course, dancing was a time where I guess I kind of pressed up against the boundaries a little bit. And one thing led to another, and we all flipped our shirts so that they resembled bras. And it was myself, my sister, and my grandmother. And, yes, my grandmother. She's a hoot to this day. And so we all are dancing and our shirts are flipped. And I remember looking around at my sister and looking around at my grandmother. And this time no one said, "Jabari, don't do that." And that was important. But I think that what was even more important is this was one of the first times where I didn't care. And I just danced. And I danced to that song and we had our shirts flipped. And then it just so happened that as we looked out of the balcony, a gathering of boys from the neighborhood were looking into our apartment. Now, to any other six-year-old, this would be horrifying. But for some reason, in that moment, it was empowering. And I thought, wow, even at that young age, I'm doing exactly what I want to do. And there are no rules, and there are no boundaries. And I can dance to this song and love it. And if those boys are watching, then there might be something up with them. And I absolutely loved it, and I just continued to live in my truth. The song went off, and then my dad comes in from work. And for some reason, the memory stops there. I don't know why. I don't know if something bad happened, or maybe that small moment of bliss was really the only little piece that I wanted to hang on to. So I continued to live in my truth, and 10 years later, I came out to my parents as gay, and that was cool. And I noticed that my high school did not have a GSA, a Gay Straight Alliance, and this was around 2006. And I said to my parents one day, I said, "You know what? I want to start a GSA. I want to start a Gay Straight Alliance in my school." And I explained to them what that was, and they said, "No, you can't do that." And again, here I am, you know, experiencing and trying to live in my own identity, and here I am, getting, again, "No, you can't do that." And I was a very obedient kid. I did not do what my parents did not want. I always listened to them. But I remember thinking, this is something that I absolutely have to do. And this is also not a criticism on my parents or my family. I know that they accessed the resources and the knowledge that was available to them at that time to keep me safe. And there were all sorts of things at play, such as racism and patriarchy and slave mentality and toxic masculinity, that made them tell me you can only exist in the world a certain way. Well, that was all well and good, but I started the GSA anyway. And my parents found out, and they knew that it was the right thing to do, and they ended up being really proud of me. That GSA is actually still up and running. I get to visit it sometime, which is really great. It's Allison High School. Thanks. So fast forward 10 more years, maybe 13 actually, because it was recently, and I have this great job at the mayor's office where I'm able to push Baltimore forward for the LGBT community. And Baltimore Magazine calls me and they say, hey, we want to do a photo shoot and an interview with you in the issue for the Faces of Pride, because it's the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And I thought, oh, wow, that's so cool that you would even call me and choose me to do that. And I remember thinking, well, I'm going to be very visible, not only to adults in the community, but particularly young people who are turning the pages and are wondering, who is working in my city government to advance my life? And I thought, this is my chance to really show that we don't have to conform to one idea of what the world thinks that we could or should or have to be. So for me, that was kind of a little coming out experience, because I decided to wear some clothing that was a little bit more gender nonconforming. This is the outfit that I wore for the photo shoot. And it was my first time shopping at a women's clothing store, first time wearing earrings that my mom tries to steal. And for me, my pronouns are he and him, and I identify as a man. But all my life, I've been pushing up against the idea of what it means to be a man and how masculinity can show up in all these different ways. And I guess I'm still doing that today. And I started it when I was 6 years old dancing to Fantasy. So thanks.
Love the image of the whole family dancing in there. That's so, so cool.
Yeah. And you could just, I mean, the night that he told this story, he had the most fabulous earrings on. I mean, just chandelier earrings. And they looked amazing.
Did you happen to notice if they were pulling his ear holes down? Because you know how that happens.
Yes.
It's heavy.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, because that happens to me.
Yeah.
No, I feel like he had hearty earlobes.
Okay. Yes. Maybe next time you see him, you could ask him for some tips on
yes.
that.
And just to be clear, his pronouns were he, him. So we are using that appropriately.
Good for you.
Thanks.
Way to go.
That's a new question we
asked. Even though you're from Annapolis.
I know.
You did right. You did real well with that. Okay. Before we close out here, we want to thank the Wine Source at Elm Avenue in Hamden. They have terrific wine and beer and snacks and all sorts of good stuff. We want to tell you to visit us at stoopstorytelling.com to find out about our upcoming season, which is our 14th season. We should say, I have big news, our 14th season.
That's crazy.
We're all just still like hopelessly straight, though. We don't have big news
yeah.
that way. But
it's the age of a teenager. Our show,
that's right.
Our entity, yeah. is the age of a sullen teenager.
Yeah, that's crazy. you can leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey
oh, yeah.
for being our producer.
Such a peach.
She's awesome. See you next week. I'm coming out.